This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Puzzle of Life and the Missing Piece, and I may say piece here is spelled P-E-A-C-E, The Puzzle of Life and the Missing Piece, Dialogue with a Master Resolving Religion's Judgments. And the author is Oliver Morgan, and Oliver joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Trafford Publishing. Hello, Oliver.
Hello.
Great to have you with us. Well, this is going to be, it could be for some of a rather intense discussion. In fact, you're bold enough to, at the beginning of the book, to say this might be the most dangerous book you will ever read. It is always dangerous to question one's belief. Well, that is true, and you say we are more than who we think we are. Jesus said he was not of this world, neither are we.
Yes.
And this book shows not only who we are, but how we are to progress through this experience. So we'll get into some of these details about what you have written, which I just read. But first of all, Oliver, tell us a little bit about yourself and what was the motivation to write this book?
Well, I started in my quest for understanding when I was quite young, I would say in high school. I was in my search for God period, I think, and read many books on religion. I was concerned about my own religion, and therefore I tried to study others, but realizing that I lived in a Christian society, I had to return to Christianity, and it was then that I started to question or try to understand, really, what this business of life was all about. In my studies of the other religions, I discovered one thing that was true in almost all of them, and that is that within each of these religions, there was stated in positive or negative form some form of the golden rule. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Don't do to others what you wouldn't want done to yourself, or do as you'd be done by. I thought that was interesting, that it was in all of these other religions. But as I continued to investigate, I realized that I don't think that I would that would apply if I were talking to a masochist, a sadomasochist, for instance. And then I questioned the golden rule, and I discovered that I think it's not a rule at all. It's a golden law. And Jesus clarified that in when he said, what you do will return to you, or what you sow you will reap. And that was a beginning for me of something really universal. And that's what I've tried to understand, not just the... I've tried to understand the Bible in a universal way, not to take things literally, but to try to understand them. All masters taught in symbol. Even Jesus taught in parable. So I thought perhaps the Bible might be such a work, that it is a symbolic work, not a literal, not one to take literally. And that was the beginning of my books. Both of them, I have tried... When you read a book and you're trying to understand, they give you a title and it sounds good, and then you go to read it, you find all this fluff and nonsense that takes up so much of the book, and you find the answers that you were searching for way in the back of it eventually, if at all. So my books, both of these, are under 100 pages. I really wanted them to be more pocketbooks, something to carry away around and think about. So I've tried to get to the point, and that's why I started out by saying it's this may be the most frightening book, a dangerous book that one will ever read. And I finished that paragraph by saying that people will argue about what they think, but they will kill for what they believe. I think that's tragic.
So what was the purpose of the Christian religion?
The Christian religion is, like all religions, it's man-made. It was created by the church. And by that, I mean the Roman church, the beginning of all this stuff. Luther eventually said the church has gotten rotten, and we must correct that. And in that process started the protesting movement. But he kept the same tenets, and I think that was the mistake. So Protestants are just Catholics with latter-day Catholics is all. So we've kept the belief system, and the belief system, as I see it, has missed the point.
So is there right and wrong? Is there good and bad?
As I see it, there is none of these things. What we were to learn, as I see it, as I interpret the Garden of Eden story, which tells us all about this duality of life, that if we accept the church, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, if we accept that, the chances are that we will identify ourselves not with spirit, but with matter. After all, we look at each other, we shake hands, we say hello, we recognize each other, but what we are seeing and touching is the physical form. And as I see the story of the garden, it was to tell us not to accept duality, good and evil, not to accept it. And that is, but we did. And in doing so, we think of ourselves as having a spirit or a soul. We do not. We have a body. And once you start thinking of yourself as a spirit in a material body, you stop thinking about yourself as a body that carries around some kind of a spirit. Makes all the difference in the world and how you view life.
We all think about God as Christians. We think about him as a perfect being.
Yes.
How do you see him?
Once I discovered, these went by steps, as my discovery went by guideposts along the way. The first thing I realized, and I believe I was told this, I read this somewhere. I don't think it came from me, but it came from somewhere. That symbolically speaking, male represents spirit, and female represents matter. Now, that does not mean that men are more spiritual than women or women are more material than men. That has nothing to do with it. It is a symbolism that once grasped makes all the difference in the world. And when I discovered that, I realized what God was. God is not an entity, and I don't think ever was meant to be. God represents pure spirit. I call it the matrix, out of which all things come. And we are of that same stuff. We are spirit. However, in order to survive in a material world, we are encased in that matter. It was important that we not identify with that matter, and I think that's what the meaning of the Garden of Eden was all about.
Some might call you an atheist.
I consider myself, since about 1991, a spiritual atheist, and I thought of it at that point, and now, in going back over the computer, I see that there is a whole bunch of people identifying themselves as spiritual atheists. I thought I was the only one. But a spiritual atheist. And that's a very difficult position to be in, because I'm neither a religionist, nor am I against... Well, I am against religion, but I feel that we as spirit beings, our calling is vast.
What place does reincarnation play in your understanding of life?
Well, reincarnation is, I would say, the engine of life. It gives us an understanding of really who we are. Jesus said, you sow what you reap. Well, we know that that there are people in this world who are really not nice at all, but are at the top of the heap, so to speak. They are respected, and they have money and position and power. And then we also know people who are at the bottom of all of this, who are kind and gentle and give you the shirt off their back, so to speak. So where does this sowing and reaping come in? It is not in the afterlife. It is in this life. And reincarnation explains that. So if we reap what we sow, where's the good or where's the bad? Good and bad in itself does not exist. That's part of duality. Good and bad are essentially what we think they are. If we don't like it, it's bad. If we like what's happening to us, it's good. But if somebody gives us what we don't want, they're evil. So good and bad are subjective decisions that we make in our lives. There is no such thing in reality. There's no such thing in the universe.
Your book obviously is controversial. And
yes.
How would you help people to understand the road that you are on? How do they get on this road if they want to learn meaning the way you have learned meaning to life?
I have developed a motto. It's what I call, do not believe, understand. Belief is what we are given. We're given it as children, and our peers, our parents, and all those we associate with, at least in church, in that surroundings, it reinforces what we were told as children. Everyone says, give me a child until he's seven and I'll give you whatever it is the rest of his life, be that a Christian or a Nazi or anything else. Children are impressionable. And given enough time and told often enough, we accept what we're told. And it'll carry us throughout our lifetime. I say, question. Question everything. Don't believe anything. Don't believe what I write. Don't believe what I say. Don't believe any of that. put these things to test. Understand. When you understand, you do not believe. You know.
You say that a lot of this came from a dream in the little time we have left. Could you share some of that?
When I was in high school, I believe my senior year, and deeply involved in the church, I had sung in the church choir since I was 8 years old. I had been involved in every part of it. I was president of my youth club in church. And I, as I said, was studying religions in all of the religions that I could find. So as I was so deeply involved in this, I had a dream in which I was seated before a very large volume, all small words. And I don't remember reading anything of the book, but upon awakening with this book in front of me, a gentle masculine voice said, "It is all so simple." And I thought, that's an interesting statement. But as much as I was involved in the church at the time, it took me years, I mean like 40-some years, before I understood the meaning of that. I didn't understand it at the time because I was deeply involved in all the things that are not simple. Then one day, as I re-met a college philosophy student, we got to talking on tapes. And I said, just for fun, like a freshman or a sophomoric philosophy student, "Let's solve the world's problems." Now, my friend had been traveling on the road, and he told me all about the beautiful country of Montana and so on. And I started to think about solving the world's problems. Crazy thought. I mean, nobody should be thinking that. But then I started to question and started to look at the Bible as a symbolic work. And the more I did that, the more simple life became.
We've been listening to Oliver Morgan. He is the author of his book, The Puzzle of Life and the Missing Piece, Dialogue with a Master Resolving Religion's Judgments. Oliver, tell us how to get your book.
You can find it. I have a website, www.aspiritualatheist.com. You can find it there. You can communicate with me there. And I think you can get it on what's the big one?
Amazon.
Or... Yeah, Amazon. Right. And and you can get it from Trafford Publishing Company as well.
Right. Well, thank you, Oliver, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you very much.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Trafford Publishing.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on TogiNet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, LaBellaVitaCosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central, on TogiNet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Welcome Home, Creating What You Want by How You Live. And the author is Sybilla Lenz, and Sybilla joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Sybilla.
Hi there.
Great to have you with us, and a great discussion about an ancient Chinese philosophy and all about home, the importance of home, and how we can create this very special environment that we all need. Let me read what you've written just to set the stage in general for everyone listening. This book, Welcome Home, has great information on a practice known as feng shui and how a person can use this tool for personal gain and happiness. It gives simple explanations of how to use an ancient science in the modern world for helping to achieve a happy and balanced life. And, of course, this ancient Chinese philosophy is a study of the relationship between human beings and their environment, and, of course, thus home. We're going to get into the details. Sybilla, first, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to write your book.
Well, I have always been very, very interested in philosophical things and metaphysical writings, and having some struggle with wealth and being a single parent, some years ago, I was stumbled upon feng shui and decided to employ some of the principles of feng shui. And what I discovered was it was just a fascinating subject, and things started to magically change in my life when I continued to follow it and apply it. The more I learned, the more I applied, and the more things started to change in my life. So that was over 10 or 12 years ago, and then I decided to, after I had been doing some consultations with some people, one of the friends that I had done some consultations with, and she had such good luck, and she was very excited. She, we discussed the possibility of putting a book out there to make it simple, because one of the things that can be tough about it is there's a lot of different philosophies about feng shui, and it's hard to figure out which one to follow, and some of those can be difficult to follow.
You describe your book as a collection of readable and engaging stories of the way various applications of feng shui help change the energy of people's homes and ultimately the energy of the people themselves. Now, let's talk about this energy of a person's home.
Well, homes and any room, any physical foundation that we're in or any environment that we're in is basically kind of, if you follow the law of physics, is all made up of movement, of some form of energy and movement. In different cultures, this energy is called different things. And here, we call it energy, and the Chinese call it qi. And that qi, when it's able to move through your environment, as it's applied with different elements, if it's able to move and flow through your environment, can create a very supportive and harmonious environment. If it is blocked in any way, it can block things in your environment as well, and it can create stagnation. or stagnant qi. And this has kind of been related to health issues and things not working well in your life, as well as when there is good energy moving around your home, things seem to be working better too.
What would block this energy?
Typical things that could block the energy are if it's not clean, if there's a lot of clutter, if there's damp, cluttered, dark basements or attics that have not been walked through, doors or rooms that have not been opened or aired out, closets that have not been opened or aired out, lots of things that are stacked underneath beds, and those are just a few examples of how that energy is just not moved. It has not been moved for, sometimes it can be years before something has been moved or turned around. And it can be felt.
You quote Christopher Alexa, who says, "The fact is, a person is so far formed by his surroundings that his state of harmony depends entirely on his harmony with his surroundings." So we're all part of the environment that we create or live in.
Exactly. One of the things that they have found is our bodies are made up of 70 to 75% water. And when we are feeling in a very good state or a high state, especially with good energy moving around us, it has been proven it's very supportive to our bodies to have good energy and free movement around us, or even looking at things that are pleasing to the eye and make us feel comfortable and uplifted. And so one of the things that I usually start with people is a very important place in our homes is our bedroom. Thinking about what do you see upon rising? What do you see when you go to bed? How do you sleep? Those are sometimes feng shui is interpreted as being something that's more of a decorative type sense, you know, used in interior design. And although it can be very pleasing, it is really to help the body feel very nourished and settled and able to sleep really well and have it feel more harmonious than anything else. The decoration and the nice, aesthetically pleasing looking environment is a plus because that makes us feel good.
Obviously, some people will think this is a myth.
Absolutely. But it's not a myth. It's been around for over 5,000 years. One of the things I say to people is just try it. You know, try a couple of different applications. And if you start thinking about it, especially if you're seated in a room and you think about the pictures or the artwork that's in that room, think about how that's making you feel, whether it makes you feel good, whether it doesn't, whether you like to come home and feel comfortable in your home, whether you're sleeping well, do you have areas in your home that you feel comfortable and areas that you don't like? I think almost everybody identifies with their home in some fashion, that way, good or bad.
You claim that sales of home, of course, we know are low right now, but feng shui can literally boost the energy of that home, the qi, for encouraging faster home sales.
Well, it's interesting that you would ask me that because just 2 weeks ago, I had a woman call me, and she had put her home on the market 3 years ago, and it's a kind of a high-priced home, and she had said she had one walkthrough in 3 years. So she was looking at feng shui as the last resort. Somebody had told her that that might work. So I went to her home, and we installed a few things, and I explained to her how the energy moves and changes. And one of the things that I noticed outside immediately was there was no flowers. There was no color on the property at all. So I had her do a few things, and the next morning I found a voicemail on my office where she was very excited to inform me that she had an appointment for a walkthrough that very next day. So it's very interesting how just moving a few things, again, changed some energy in the home and property.
You make some very strong statements. You say something as simple as painting your front door could help you have a flourishing career. Now, help us understand that.
Well, the door of our homes or our businesses is considered to be the mouth of chi. That's where the energy enters in. So having that door be a different color can sometimes boost the energy of the chi coming to that door. Colors have a very high vibrational element to them. So when you have a whole different range of colors to pick from, you have a whole different levels of vibrations to work with on using the color of your door. And just doing something that simple can help boost a little more energy to the door. And if you think about it, if you're driving through a neighborhood, think about what doorways you would look at and what doorways might make you feel like, you know, or that you wouldn't give much attention to. So usually it's going to be something that has a little more color.
And of course, a doorway opens up into a whole new world.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, there's a lot of things associated with that doorway, too. You know, that's an entrance to all the good chi coming into your home or business, and you want to make sure that doorway's pleasing and clean and can open unobstructed, allowing all that good energy in, as if you're allowing all that new business in.
Here's another bold statement. Letting go of old and worn out items, in addition to clearing clutter, may help to invite in the perfect love relationship.
Well, it's been proven scientifically. There's some authors out there teaching this now and scientists teaching this now, too, that energy of others can be imprinted on things that we have. And holding on to things from a past, especially if it was an unpleasant past, is just holding on to the energy of those things. So sometimes I'll say to people, especially if they're feeling like they want to move on and attract a different relationship in their life and they feel like they can't move those things on out of their environment, then I suggest just packing them up and putting them in bins someplace so that they're not something that they're handling all the time or holding all the time because, again, they're holding on to that energy.
And our home is our sanctuary, as you strongly describe throughout your book. And that home sanctuary promotes happiness. It even promotes prosperity.
It can, because if you think about it, if you feel uplifted and you've slept well and you know you have a place to go that's going to help you de-stress from that crazy day of all the technology that we have to face every day with all the different signals that are going to, I always say to people, we're like those giant remotes, remote control. We have all those signals going through us and all that energy going through us. And when you can go into your home and have places where you can feel very rested and able to shut down, it's wonderful because it does create a sanctuary for you for that to let it all go and then be able to be rested and restored to go back out there again.
And I think everyone would agree that a home environment, especially as you're describing, can literally, and we've talked a little bit about this, you've talked about the revitalization, the restoring, but even can heal our lives.
Absolutely. The healing aspect is so true, and I've seen this over and over again in my own life and also in working with others. Sometimes people will say to me, well, we have a front door to our house and we never use that entrance and we never use that half of the house, or we have a stairwell that we never use, or we have, in my own situation, we had a complete stairwell that had a bunch of storage that was under that stairwell that we had not gone in and opened up and cleaned out and refreshed. And all of those things make a difference when you can open those areas up and change and allow that energy to move all the way through, because it can be very healthy and healing for you, you know, for your body. There's a lot of science and evidence around out there about that, that having areas, especially in our homes, that are not completely clear and free for that chi to move through constantly is can also be kind of a mirror to our own lives. And it's also been said that feng shui masters can visit here and view neighborhoods and tell you what's going on with the occupants in those homes just based on looking at a home.
The title of your book, Welcome Home, has an interesting, I guess the word home is spelled differently.
Well, what we tried to do, the goal was we wanted it to be om. Om is like a sacred symbol that's been used in chanting for thousands of years as well. And it is to bring you back to a place of complete calm and well-being internally. And that's what we wanted to get the message, that home can be the same way. And if you can think about that if you knew you had a home that you could just walk in and feel that comfort and relaxation and you know, be able to re-energize yourself, what a blessing that would be, and make us feel good for going back out there and making the difference we want to do.
And we'll close on this thought. One of the statements at the beginning of your book, made by Anonymous, that is attributed to, but if nothing changes, nothing changes. That's very well put. We've been listening to Sybilla Lenz. She's the author of her book, Welcome Home, Creating What You Want by How You Live. Sybilla, tell us how to get your book.
You can get the book on Balboa Press, and you can get it from Amazon, and it's available in Kindle format as well. And you can also visit my website at www.positivelivingfengshui.com and all those areas.
Thank you for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Science, Belief, Intuition, Reflections of a Physician. And the author is Dr. Lawrence Wood, and Dr. Wood joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Dr. Wood.
Hello, Steve. Thank you for having me on your program.
Great to have you with us. I guess the best way to say to everyone, open your hearts, open your minds, and listen carefully to Dr. Wood, because he's very unique in his combining science with spirituality. And let me read what a couple things you've written, Doctor, so everyone understands kind of the direction we're going to be going. You say, my book describes living the interface of science and spirituality, where one complements the other to provide greater understanding than either alone. Well, it seems to be that is a unique approach, because usually scientists have a tough time with spirituality, and I'm not sure about those who are spiritual, if they would accept science into their understanding of things that are happening around them. But first of all, Doctor, tell us about yourself and then why you wrote the book.
Well, thank you, Steve, for that nice summary. I'm a critical care physician, now retired from my position at the University of Chicago. I did a lot of teaching, I did a lot of research, and I spent a lot of time cultivating a psycho-spiritual relationship with the Lord in my life. And I'm the retired dean of medical education at the University of Chicago, where I was responsible for the medical students' curriculum. Those characteristics are the things that got me very interested in the relationship between science and spirituality. And I found often in discussing it with my colleagues and friends around the world that some of my scientifically oriented colleagues regarded as antagonistic the relationship between science and spirituality, whereas I never found it that way. I always had the impression that the one helped the other, and we can talk some more about that.
The big question, I guess, to start with, to lay the foundation for our discussion, do you pray?
Oh, yes. Prayer is a very important part of my life, and my wife Elaine and I were up early this morning because we're a little earlier than you are, living on the West Coast, praying for the events of the day, as we regularly do. And while I was practicing prayer for my patients, who by nature of my practice were always critically ill, was an important part of my daily routine. It also was an important part of my investigative routine during the years of my career when I was involved in science, and I often found myself stumped by the problems or the data or the observations, and would use that as the basis for a questioning prayer and would wait for the answer.
You also describe yourself as rather relentless at the early stages of your life, trying to accomplish a lot. You even said you had a whining demeanor. You've really changed.
Years and pain caused one to change, and the whining demeanor was always attributed by me, as I came to understand it, as what happens when one reaches beyond their capabilities to tackle problems that they hadn't thought of before, and found yourself over your head. When I did that, I found myself crying out for help, and that's the origin of the term whining.
And with that explanation, it sounds like there was humility there, even though you had accomplished a lot and seemed to be, far as your goals, you had accomplished your goals, but at the same time, you were humble, knowing that you couldn't do it all yourself.
I think it's just impossible to deal with the beauty of the cosmos and the scientific approach to it, and the extraordinary wonders of the spirit, to be anything less than humble.
You talk about the still small voice. Now, tell us what the still small voice is.
for me, I became introduced to topic in early Bible studies where the Book of Kings talks about the still small voice in a graphic way. And then some 35 years ago, while I was attending a retreat, the retreat directors taught us how to journal to the Lord of our lives, and the first was write a letter of your concerns of the moment. The second was the surprising part. It was to write down what the Lord's reply was, and that surprised me and surprised many of us, but as we began to practice this exercise, we found that we did hear the still small voice, and that the still small voice had the characteristics of affirmation and surprise that were a major part of it. More recently, there have been several, really a series of books that have talked about the still small voice, the most recent one being a pastor in rural Chicago area, Bill Hybels, who talked about how the still small voice and his listening to it had influenced his life at various stages. And that's what I mean by the still small voice. There is an overlap with the concept of intuition. Intuition is an increase in knowledge without apparent effort. And that seems to me very close to what most people mean by the still small voice, the only difference being the actual words that are heard.
Tell us why spirituality differs from religiosity.
Gee, that's a good question, Steve. Spirituality tends to be a more broad-based openness to the spirit working in one's life, whereas religiosity for me has more of a set of rules, guidelines, instructions to follow how a group activity should proceed. So religiosity tends to be a group-related thing. Spirituality is a very personal thing. It tends to be more democratic and tends to be more free and open than religiosity. In the book itself, Science, Belief, and Intuition, has a section that outlines the difference between these two in a way that I think is very helpful. It was helpful to me when at a stage in my life I moved from what I would call rigid Catholicism to a more reformed Catholicism, which as a reformed Catholic I found myself seeking small group assistance for the struggles in my life, and we shared those, some nine of us, for many years, still are doing that actually, in terms of how we help each other work through the vagaries of life.
One of your messages in your book says, God speaks to her people and answers their questions. Listen to her. Now, that's different than this emphasis on her.
Yes, there's a gender bias in most literature and most writings about the presence of God in our lives that carries the centuries-old predominance of the male gender and attributes to God maleness. I can't help but see that God created them male and female, and that in imitating God's presence in our lives, the femaleness is just as important as the maleness. In fact, the combination of the two is what leads to wholeness in one's life, and that's why I insist on disciplining myself to make sure that I don't follow the prejudices of others and deal with the feminine nature of God as well.
I think most of us, even those of us who are just students of science, or maybe those confused by science, would understand that science has its procedures. It's very strict in its approach. And yet you say more progress is made by asking God to explain than by science.
Yes, Steve, I do say that in the Science, Belief, and Intuition book. And the reason for that is that for all its rigor and focus, science frequently comes up empty with regard to making progress in understanding. That's the nature of science. As a scientific method, it tries to reject hypotheses that would be explanations of what one sees, and when one rejects as many as of the hypotheses as one can, you're left with science as the sort of scientific source of knowledge, that which cannot be rejected. You can't do that with spirituality's approach to new knowledge and understanding, because there aren't any measurements that can detect the spiritual presence of God or spiritual issues. We don't have a godometer. We don't have a measurement of God, so we can't reject God, and therefore it doesn't fit into the purview of the scientific method. But what it does fit into is the way that the still small voice and its parallel intuition can verify what myths are the basis of the beliefs that we bring toward the Lord in questioning. And when we ask the question, we often get an answer.
Well, it reminds me of that statement in James, if anyone lack wisdom, let him ask of God. It's very simple.
Yes, that's exactly the point.
There's a
small story that I relate, if we have time.
Please.
Yeah, I tell the story in the book, Science, Belief, and Intuition, and it goes like this. About 10:30 at night, I had the home phone ring, and when I answered, it was my boss, the dean, who said, Larry, I have a problem. I've got a friend with a 30-year-old daughter, moribund, in a nearby hospital. He'd like you to see her. About an hour later, I was there examining her and found her to be in septic shock, the kind of shock that comes about from a serious infection, comatose, with lungs filled with excess liquid, needing a ventilator with extraordinary settings just to keep her alive, and a very low blood pressure in renal failure. While examining her, I prayed quietly, as often I did, Lord, Agnes is dying. How can I help her? In the midst of this fairly noisy ICU cubicle with the ventilator chugging along and the bells and whistles ringing, I heard distinctly less ventilation, less PEEP, less circulating volume, more dobutamine. I paused to think about those characteristics, and I thought, boy, she hasn't received those in any appropriate combination, so we began. First, we dropped the tidal volume, and then we dropped the PEEP, and her ventilation improved, and her blood pressure came up. We then lowered her circulating volume by taking off 4 units of her blood out of an intravascular catheter. That lowered her intravascular pressures in her lung and decreased the edema formation there. And then we, as the blood came off, her blood pressure decreased, so we maintained it with the vasoactive drug dobutamine, raising it from 2 to 12 micrograms per kilogram per minute. And by dawn of the next day, her cardiopulmonary status was nearly normal. As I was leaving the unit to go to my own hospital to make rounds, I prayed again, Lord, thank you. Still wondering whose voice that was. So, Steve, there I was, living the interface of science and belief.
That is for certain, and I want you to operate on me if I ever need help.
Thank you. Thank you for saying so. It's Albert Einstein, who says so many wise things, had a little comment about this. He says, the intuitive mind is a sacred gift. The rational mind is a faithful servant. We honor the servant and have forgotten the gift. Mm. I think what he's saying is in medicine and in science, there's room for the gift of intuition.
Well, and the still small voice, may I say God's voice?
Yes, you may, and I certainly do in the book.
Well, thank you, Dr. Wood. Thank you for being with us. Dr. Lawrence Wood, the title of his book, Science, Belief, Intuition, Reflections of a Physician. Dr. Wood, tell us how to get your book.
Yes, Steve, thank you. The book is published by Balboa Press and can be purchased at their website, www.balboapress.com, or from the corresponding agencies from Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Thank you for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.